You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
Oh yeah, welcome to another thrilling episode of the Toilet of Hell Radio Show. I'm Joe Thrashenkill, with me, the number one good boy. That would be 365 days of horror, or as we call him, Jordan. How's it going, Jordan?
It's going well. It is October, the best month and the only good month out of the entire year. It is their October holiday spooktacular, and we are starting things off right with a very special guest, Mr. Raw Sewage.
Hello, everybody. I am a doctor, you know. I didn't go to fake medical school for you to just call me Mr.
Are you an MD or a DO?
I was RN, registered nut.
Well, I'm glad to have, in these trying times, a medical professional on the show.
Unprecedented times.
It kicks ass, to be honest with you.
But unprecedented times? I guess if you like sitting around your house playing with G.I. Joes, it's pretty cool.
Oh, I thought you said unprecedented. I was like, oh, that's tight.
Oh, God. I wish. That's everyone talks about who should be president, but no one wants to talk about how there shouldn't be a president.
No, I'm very happy to talk about that. I'm extremely pleased with the possibility.
let's just remove the office entirely. It's outstripped its usefulness.
Fully agreed. And Lord willing, we might be getting there. But what we brought you on the show today? Bear in mind, Ross, by the time that they're getting us to us talking, I've already played the Monster Mash twice, we really want to focus in on the finer elements of this upcoming holiday. We reached out to you because you're a man of taste and stature within the metal community. For
bad
folks,
taste, bad taste, bad stature. Sure.
For folks that are, you know, They might not know anything about anything. Let's go ahead and just go through some of your accolades. Now you are a fella that's been known to play a note or two in Exhumed, right?
Yeah, on different occasions in the '90s, and then now again in the last 5 years or so, we patched things up and are having a lot of fun together again. And it's easy work for me.
And you've got new things coming up with that band as well. I heard that there might be some shows available, not to go to because we shut it all down, but available on the internet.
Yeah, we've been trying to build up in lieu of anything else to do, build up our YouTube channel. Matt's doing a lot of guitar playthroughs, trying to get the other guys into it. We had the one giant streaming show that we all met up for a group chat with all the people who logged in, and that's available from the Death Revenge tour cycle. And we're working on some other stuff for possibly streaming shows. We might actually be all in the same room together again at some point in the near future. These all very tentative plans, nothing to announce with far as dates, but just keep an eye out and subscribe to the Exhumed YouTube channel. It's official Exhumed, and we're trying to put stuff up every week, whether it be clips from old shows or we had fans send in questions for us to answer, or just anything, because we're all bored out of our fucking minds and sick of our significant others.
How exactly have you been filling all the time aside from doing band work?
Luckily my actual job has started to pick up a little bit again. I'm a screen printer by day, doing flat stock, which is posters and art prints. And after the initial first 4 or 5 months of lockdown, artists started working again and saying like, hey, I actually can still sell stuff for print. The world hasn't ended yet. So we slowly started, you know, we're taking precautions. We wear masks around each other. It's usually just instead of having two full-time printers, we switch off days. So there's a little bit of that work. Definitely during lockdown, tried to hone my skills at video editing, preparing for the future of music, which was going to be videos online. So I've been doing a lot of that, doing production work for the bands Ghoul and Exhumed, editing videos for both of those bands for YouTube channels and for Facebook and things like that. And I've been playing with my G.I. Joes a lot.
Tell me about these G.I.s, Joe.
Well, I am a total dork, always have been as a kid. I'm actually perfectly suited for lockdown because that's how I spent my childhood, was just playing with toys by myself. And unlike other kids, I didn't blow them up with firecrackers. I actually held on to them. So I've sold a lot. I've sold a lot of Transformers in the last like 3 or 4 years when my parents said, get this shit out of our attic already. And I've figured out I had a pretty good G.I. Joe collection still going. So I'm like, all right, we'll keep all this stuff because it's pretty badass and maybe the best action figure toy ever made. So I've just been playing around with them, taking photos, because I mean, I don't have band rehearsals. I don't have much to do other than that and work and watch movies. So I've been, it's dorky, but it hits my serotonin levels. So we got to do what we got to do to stay sane in these times, right?
I mean, it sounds pretty good to me. All I do is work and then do school stuff and then do this show. That's it. It sucks. I have no time. I want to play.
Yeah, exactly. So we try to just keep ourselves busy and keep looking towards a positive future if there is possibly one. So, wow, this got dour real fast.
No, we're good. Everybody, every one of our listeners is depressed already. It's okay.
Yeah, I think we're all going to be okay. We're just all going to suffer for about a year and a half, 2 years of some really trying shit. And we're already 8 months. We got like just imagine another 8 months of this exact same bullshit.
Easy,
no big
easy.
Deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll make it.
Well, what we do on these shows, these October spooktaculars, is that we get a guest on, we have them pick a movie for us, we all watch it, and we discuss it. Now, the name of the movie that you picked out for this one, I put this on Twitter earlier, so hopefully a few folks are following along. This would be Frankenstein's Army, released in 2013. When did you first catch this one?
It's probably about, I want to say like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It was like one of those things sitting around, what are these dumb movies? And I'd seen a trailer, I think, for the movie Army of Frankenstein's, which is a totally different movie and totally sucks. Don't watch that one. Make sure you get Frankenstein's Army. And I was like, well, that sounds stupid and idiotic, so let's just go ahead and put it on. And I was just phenomenally blown away. It's just an incredible looking movie that just sings to the younger horror freak in me that, you know, you're watching something that's full of practical effects and monsters. You know, any fans of gore and movies like Meatball Machine and Tokyo Gore Police, like this is just an English language version of something like that, just outlandish monsters and bullshit. And everything in the movie even like ticked my don't watch box. It's first person, you know, found footage kind of film. I mostly hate those. And it's also World War II. I like to call them plotsies at this point, because every time you need a good plot device, just throw a Nazi in there. They're the super bad guys. But it's World War II based, and I was like, all right, we'll see. Nazis are bad, crazy scientists again. But this movie just goes so above and beyond expectations in both of those regards of the found footage and just Nazis as bad guys, and just delivers you just this fucking insane mess from inside the director's mind. It's crazy bonkers.
So I think I had the reaction, and Jordan, you might have had this as well, where I saw the name, I saw the description, and I was like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, it was. I remember this how I got my nom de plume, 365 Days of Horrors, watching a different horror movie every day for a year and reviewing them, and I have vague memories of seeing, like, on Netflix when you're scrolling through just trying to find anything, Frankenstein's Army. And it's just, the name is a turn off. The poster itself itself was really generic looking. It kind of brought up memories of, I don't know if you are know about them, but The Asylum.
That oh, studio, yeah. That, oh, that, oh, I know Asylum. Oh, yeah. Lara Craft, Mummy Raider or whatever the fuck they put out.
Yeah, they take the kind of big studio movies and crank out shitty, cheap movies, so they hope your nearsighted grandma buys it by accident for you when she's going through the $1 bin at the gas station. So that kind of had the same feel. They have those just generic horror movies that are really painful to watch, and I thought that's what this was going to be, but I was happily surprised that it wasn't.
I mean, that's my same feeling too. When I first saw it, I was like, this is going to be shit, but I watch a lot of shit. I'm like, what's one more piece of shit? And I'm, oh, Jesus Christ, I love this movie so much.
Yeah, I think it was just the description for me. It's okay, well, there's Nazis and Frankensteins, and I'm just getting flashbacks to all of the fucking bullshit that came out in the early 2010s, like Pride and Prejudice and zombies and Draculas and zombies and Nazis, and I'm just like, I don't, this is fucking hack shit.
I was flipping through TV yesterday, and I get the Comet Channel, which is just like real bad sci-fi and occasional horror. Yesterday had Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies.
That was a big deal when that, or was it Zombies or Vampire? It was Abraham Lincoln Vampire Killer, wasn't it?
It was Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter was like the real movie that was in theaters.
Oh no, they made it. They made a knockoff of that shitty movie.
They did, and oh, it was God. As bad as you would think. And because it was on TV, like any gore that was in it was blurred out. And I'm like, what's the point?
Yeah, that's. I mean, that and reminds me, even, you know, going back further, there was that, I don't know if you guys remember Zone Troopers, like that was that, the guy from Doll Man was in that one. It's just like a bat, it's just monsters in World War II. And yeah, this movie has everything going against it, just everything to get passed by. And that's why I was like really excited you guys hadn't seen it.
Well, I think that, yeah, so you mentioned it's found footage, and I gotta say I really like how they implemented the found footage effect across all of this. I thought it worked really well. The way that it was written to the plot made it work for it too. And again, like using old Soviet cameras, so you're constantly changing the lens on it and getting a different view was a neat effect as well.
Yeah, I was rewatching it last night, and I'd also watched like the making of, and they were talking about having, you know, trying to make it feel like it's like one cut basically, and that is a brilliant maneuver. When I was watching it again, I'm like, oh, that's where they can cut it, and they do this other thing is switching the lens to 2 times or 4 times. It is a really good, clever movie making to get by that restriction of trying to make it look like one shot.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, We can kind of take this from the top here. This is a I'm just gonna go ahead and give full warning. I'm reading from Wikipedia like a fucking schlub. It's a Dutch American Czech collaboration, which it looks like this thing was kind of being built out over a period of a long time. And I think the end results here are like, wow, it was really worth actually committing to this insane project. The plot would be, you know, you've got these Soviet soldiers that are documenting, you know, definitely no war crimes. They're documenting cool things that the Soviet army is doing in the middle of World War II. And it leads to intrigue, as all good things do.
I guess the director was, they originally had another movie, so how long it was in production. They had a short released that was going to be zombie Nazis in like the mid early 2000s, and nothing came of that. And I guess Brian, the director had worked with Brian Usna before, who's another guy I love for fucking just balls out gore and thin plot lines and Bride of Reanimator and stuff like that. And I guess that never came to fruition, and they found this location in the Czech Republic, and they're like, oh, we can make this movie finally. So it's a weird production with like a lot of people from different countries all just working together to make this movie you've never heard of.
Yeah, the location specifically, the meat of the story takes place in some kind of, I don't know, industrial center, slaughterhouse looking thing. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect for this.
Yeah, I think it works because sometimes you see some of these movies are just set in the desert. It's like, oh, they have no money. This is clearly why it's set in the desert with this, you know, it's, there's a little village and then you're inside for 90% of it. And like you said, it works out really well.
And I guess it was an abandoned coal mine in the Czech Republic, and they found it. And like, there's a lot of like, I don't know what you call it, just like a scenery shots, just like in the corner, a statue of Mary, and you know, just like a like iron beam with all these weird devices around it, and all that stuff was just there.
Wow.
Like they just found it, and we're just like whole. And they said they shot entirely to script, but I'm like, there's no way you guys didn't work around some of this amazing shit and just be like, oh, we can do some cool shit here. But all, yeah, all those catacombs, all in the same area, the mining carts, all that shit, they, I guess, was just there.
That's what if a fortuitous find?
Yeah, absolutely.
The plot around this movie follows a small battalion of Soviets. They're documenting their actions. Dimitri, the guy behind the camera, is you know, interviewing folks and filming the action as they're shooting up Nazis and such. We meet our ragtag crew in the opening shots of this, and this is a movie that I would say is just insanely well casted because everyone has the face that you would expect for their character.
Yeah, one of the main guys is, yeah, he's like Russian born, a bunch of actors I'd never seen before since. I guess they've done some stuff, but really good performances by all of these no-name extras from other movies, I thought.
I agreed, totally. I mean, you've got your chisel-jawed Soviet hero from Krakow, Poland. You've got some kid. And you've got, you know, definitely my favorite, Vasily. Within 1 second of looking at him, you're like, that is one rotten motherfucker.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the best part, is that like they're against, I hate the plotsies, like Breaking Bad brought in Nazis to make Walter White seem like a good guy, even though he was a meth dealer destroying lives. But in this case, the first setup of this Soviet troop is they go into a village, raid a village, and it is heavily implied that they raped and raided the place.
Yeah. You know, it's not spelled out directly, but they're leaving completely loaded to the gills, drunk, and killing a chicken.
Yeah, there's no good guys in this movie when you really think about it.
Yeah, not really. There's just the unfortunate situations of war and then monsters.
I think this is something that I really appreciated. It's I've heard it said, quoted, that it's impossible to make an anti-war movie because inevitably somebody will watch it and think, wow, how cool. Like, Full Metal Jacket's a prime example of that. I mean, even though, you know, you can look at that and be like, wow, this is absolutely fucking horrific. There are still thousands of other people that watch the same movie and like, wow, Army, cool.
That guy went against adversity. He's cool and I want to be like him. But this movie, not so much.
Yeah, so it's, you know, doesn't shy away from, you know, the implications of constant war crimes that are real with any kind of battle. And I appreciated that. I appreciated that no one really has many redeeming qualities. Some are worse than others, though.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't know how much you guys get into spoilers, but like the main character has gotten these troops into this situation. He ends up having his own sympathetic story, but he's still doing horrible things throughout. And they all are, because now they're beset by this situation where their lives are on the line. And these are people, like, they actually act like it. Like, they're willing to do anything to get the fuck out of here.
I think that, Jordan, you think, how do you feel about the spoilers on this one?
I think, you know, we've given enough people warning that this is the movie that we're going to talk about. They can pause, go watch the movie, and come back so we can actually talk about it.
Okay.
All right. Let's do it, then.
We're getting right into this thing. Number one, the big spoiler of this movie, it's actually Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
We'll get to that later. you know, along the way, our battalion gets a signal coming from some abandoned mining village. They're not able to get their message out anywhere else, and they're not able to respond to the signal. They just get the same repeated message from wherever the fuck this bombed out mining village is.
Yeah, some other troop 303 or something. They're trying
Tiger
to
Bear.
Tiger Bear 303. They're trying to save their Russian comrades.
Yeah, and in approaching this mining village, they encounter what I would describe as a whole shit ton of dead nuns.
Yes.
It's a lot of them, man.
It's more dead nuns than I thought I ever wanted to see, but I think now I want to see even more.
Yeah, which, you know, generally, if you're seeing such a thing, you can probably imagine something bad happened, I suppose, but undeterred, our heroes soldier on.
And yeah, and if you're a fan of dead nuns from The Nun, oh, just you're in luck. This movie's got way more dead nuns than The Nun had.
A literal pile of dead nuns.
And then one they kill.
Yes.
Fucker.
Yeah, she was still alive amid the pile of dead nuns, and our man Vasily, being the dead-eyed sociopath that he is, he goes and slits her throat. There's probably a less painful way of taking care of that, but I don't know what it is, so we can move on.
Yeah, just the fog of war, fuck it, where these guys aren't exactly the good guys. And I also want to mention, just in terms of World War II movies, another thing I really appreciate about this one was it not being about Americans. This is about Russians, and still in English, and they all got accents or whatever, but I just get so bored with the Americans who played such a, actually, I mean, my grandfather was there, and they certainly played a significant role, but the Russians lost like 20 million people in World War II, and they were so integral to defeating Hitler and the Nazis. They're the ones who stormed into Berlin, and it's so good to see like a movie, even if they're, you know, a little rough around the edges as the Russian army was, it's just, it's different.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you want to think about it in a way, most of the media we consume around World War II celebrates the American perspective, even though, as you said, the unimaginable costs of war for Russia. It's a little bit like, I don't know, stumbling into the game like in the fourth quarter, hitting a three, and then, you know, as the game continues, being like, well, you know, it was tough, but I had to carry all that weight.
What was that submarine movie where they capture the Enigma device with Bon Jovi was in it?
Wait, what?
There was U-571?
Yeah, the one where they were like, oh, we know the English did this historically, and they're the one who did this insane thing. But what is it? Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi's in it. It's American now. Shit pisses me off.
I want to see the Bon Jovi submarine movie now.
World War One or World War
II. Don't watch the Bon Jovi submarine movie. Just don't.
It's a... One of you fellas, can you carry me to this next place where our soldiers go?
While this is happening, they're coming across weird things on their travels. Like, they find a skeleton in the woods, but it has sort of like an animal head. And they also find the dead Nazi, but he's all weird looking, and there's like metallic things on his fingers. So lots of weird stuff is happening as we're progressing further and further into the village.
Yeah, I like the way they set that one zombie, because they're like, well, this guy's dead, but it's like he didn't look so dead that he was necessarily dead. So when he attacks, you're like, okay, well, that was just a guy who was at death's door. You know, like he was just, so he had his last thing. So the Russian troops are not fully on board with, hey, there's zombie monsters now. They're just like, oh, that was crazy. That guy was still alive.
Can you describe the naked white thing that they uncover?
And when they finally, so they think they're going into a church. And I think this is where they split into the coal mining factory, because they do walk into a church and they get inside and they're like, this looks more like a manufacturing facility of some kind. And they are looking around and they find this, they described in the making of, they wanted a sexless monster that just kind of looked like a piece of, like a body that you couldn't really identify in any way. And I guess they found some skinny lady to play it. And, they turn on the power and this thing gets powered up and it starts kind of herky jerking around, and they're trying to talk to it because it looks like somewhat human. And as they get ready to shoot it, that's when you get your first real totally bizarre wickedness. Her chainsaw arm fires up and she guts the squad leader.
it's pretty gnarly. I dig it a lot, and I have to say, I don't know if I could approach something like that. Like, that's probably something I can reason with. But we have to use horror logic here.
It did seem a little foolish. They're like, hey, are you okay? And it's just like nothing but stitches and scars, chainsaw-ish arm. And like, she had, if you look carefully, she had like a one patch over one of her breasts that was just a Nazi symbol tattoo, like just patched on there, like into the flesh.
But yeah, I really dug the confusion around that, and then just immediately gutting the commanding officer, and especially the effects around his intestines totally unspooling across the floor.
Oh yeah, the makeup, they were talking, they had about 4 months of pre-production, and the director, he's Dutch, Richard Rophuurst.
That's probably right.
I'm not sure how they do the double A in Dutch, but anyways, he was actually a production designer on the movie Faust, which was terrible. Don't watch it, but it looked cool, but it's not worth watching. And some other stuff with Brian Yuzna, and so he, you know, drew all these monsters, and they're just insane looking. And the effects, they're not a group I've ever heard of. It's a lot of like Dutch and Czech people working, at least when they showed the behind the scenes movie that I watched. And they did some incredible work, and they talk about like using Stan Winston's blood formula and stuff. So they're obviously well schooled, but yeah, the gore effects in it are just really cool. Like, just it throws you right back to the 80s. And I guess they were also big. The director talks about being a big fan of The Thing.
I can definitely see that. Yeah, with the way that so many things in this movie were obviously like handcrafted with love. It definitely checks out.
Yeah, his drawings of the monsters are insane, and the effects guys were talking about, like, well, you know, we wanted to do all these practical effects, and so he draws the way he drew these drapes and chains. He's like, we can cover up stuff, and it did remind me a lot of Gwar, like, and you know, I've toured with Gwar, and you know, seeing their behind the scenes and how they set up their monsters and where the eye holes can be, and it's really, this is just that like level 100. It's insane what they were able to pull off.
I mean, I was watching this movie with my wife last night, and I was saying the exact same thing. Like, you know, she unfortunately never got a chance to see Gwar, but like, it was like, okay, well, you know, the way the blade effects and like all the blood spooling out, like that's totally something that like an insane crew put together, and they know their stuff. Like, they know it back and forth.
Yeah, and another thing I thought was interesting, the director was saying that he was a big fan of Star Wars toys. Like, he collected toys as a kid, and he's like, people think, it's a weird interview, he's like, people think I'm a really great artist, but I don't really care. Like, what the fuck? But he talked about how he approached the monsters, and it works perfectly with the aesthetic of the movie, being it's Frankenstein piecing things together. And he was talking about like action figures as a kid, and he realized that, you know, the TIE fighter pilot was just part stormtrooper, part X-wing pilot painted black, and he approached the monster design that way.
Interesting. So
the director did all the conceptual work for all the monsters, and just handed it off to these special effects guys, who went above and beyond anything I've seen practically done in a long time.
Yeah, it very impressive front to back on all of this. After our command leader, unfortunately, has his guts spooled across the room. Oh,
Vasily points to Vasily for slaughtering another guy on death's door.
That's very brave.
He grabs the knife and, you know, it closes up. You don't actually see it, which is nice filmmaking, but shoves the knife into the commander's heart and just gives it this steely-eyed stare to his compatriots, like, you fucking wimps, I got to do this, don't I?
Yeah. Again, just more points of strong-willed Russian sociopathy. I just by far my favorite character.
Yeah, absolutely. He's phenomenal in he's in most of it, and he's just got this look. He's just like, you would not fuck with this man.
So after that fella's dead, there's, you know, then an argument like, well, who's running this operation, fellas? And in which you've got your strong jawed Polish man versus the, again, insane Vasily for command of a ragtag team of troops. Of course, Vasily ends up losing this battle, but his compatriots promises that he'll help stab Sergei in the neck when when the time comes.
It's brilliant. Yeah, just fucking Russians, man. It's so good.
I don't know. I had this period where I was really obsessed with art that came out of the gulags of the Soviet Union. Just like some of the most depraved shit I've ever seen. Like people that have no will to live and do not value life in the least bit. And I don't know if that says something about me, where I was just like totally transfixed by that stuff. But it carries out into the action in this movie for sure.
Yeah, I think it was pretty accurate in its depiction of Russian troops. They were, you know, what I've read about them, like the Navy would go out with, you know, just their, they wanted to know who they were being killed by. So they would just go out with like berets and t-shirts on into battle and just didn't give any fucks. They had a different kind of value of what life is, especially in that time period, that, you know, just sending wave after wave of troops like to the slaughter until they just, you know, overwhelmed Germany with massive human resources.
I don't know. I'm not a tactician or whatever. It worked, although maybe there was another way.
Well, they didn't, you know, if we want to get into world history, like they didn't have the manufacturing capabilities that, you know, Germany had worked up during that time period, and nor the engineering. Like their tanks weren't it just wasn't as good. None of their stuff worked as good. But what they did have was a lot of people.
Sometimes you just need a bullet sponge.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's true. I have to tell you though, as I was watching this movie, I kept being like overwhelmed with this feeling that it was, the movie looked like a video game, and it honestly looked like probably the best video game movie that had ever been made, because that's not a high bar to clear. Just it reminded me a lot of the recent Wolfenstein games, where there are insane Nazi zombie creations in there as well. I feel like they could make a mint if they slapped that label on that.
Probably it would have been done better. I was thinking a lot of BioShock, because it has a lot of that steampunk kind of feel to it. And I actually like looked up the dates, because I was like, was he just inspired by BioShock with, you know, like the old timey nautical helmet kind of look?
Oh yeah,
that guy in BioShock. And then I looked it up, and BioShock first came out in 2007, and this guy's the short that I it's like when things get worse or something. It's just they only made trailers, they never got funding for the film, but the trailers for it show these zombies, like these Nazi zombies, dropping into the Netherlands from like old timey hot air balloons that look all patchwork and zombies. So that was about 2004, 2006. They were working on that. So it preceded BioShock. So I think there was just like the thing that I could think of the earliest look where I was thinking was like the old Hellboy comics kind of started to nail on that in the 90s, that steampunk Nazi kind of aesthetic. That was the first one I could really think of that. With the, I forget the character, but he had a gas mask and like knife hands or something.
Oh,
and
I was, yeah. Like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about with this one. I just couldn't name it.
Yeah, so I was thinking, as like in terms of like, maybe it was just in the, to use a German term, maybe it was just in the zeitgeist that this kind of like, you know, steampunk started to kind of pull off, and then Nazis together with that, and maybe that just everybody kind of was on the same vibe, and this guy was on that vibe too, and he just does it amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And, I think that, I don't know, if anything, I would like people to go into this movie and just like see how the first person camera shoots all of the action. Like it's framed so incredibly well that like it really does kind of feel immersive in a way that, you know, other things do not.
The director talked about that. He said, you know, like first person is, you know, he's like this kind of overused thing, like, you know, like think about Paranormal Activities, like that, those suck, except maybe the first one's okay, but Jesus Christ, let it go. But he was talking about, he's like, you know, I want people to feel like they're in this movie, like I want them to feel that they're amongst this, these, like that they're just stuck in this horrible situation along with all these people. And there's their approach to effects was kind of interesting. There was the first appearance of the drill nose guy, the mosquito guy,
yes,
on stilts. He shows up and they had safety wires on him, And they just left it in the shot, and they were like, fuck it, he's dropping from the ceiling. So they incorporated the safety wires on this guy that was on these, like, you know, 6 foot tall stilts. And they're just like, all right, that's just part of the monster now. Like, we'll just roll with it. And I mean, I didn't think about it till I watched the making of. It all looked like it was supposed to be there when I was watching it the first time.
Yeah.
One of the good things that the movie does with the monsters is it doesn't linger on anyone for too long. So you get enough of a look at it where you can understand like why it's dangerous and why it's scary and why it doesn't look quite right. But then you don't really have enough time to say, hey, well, this is ridiculous or this looks silly. It's just long enough to be scary and make sense.
Yeah. I think that the first person approach really did work in its favor in that way, because it's, yeah, you're just getting these flashes of it and you're just like, Jesus, that looks fucking insane.
Yeah, and if you frame the shot in such a way, you don't have to worry about what the back of it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, and it really, that first person thing, like, again, I usually don't like it, but then they get, I guess after they find some, they go digging around in the catacombs of this place, which, again, was actually part of the set, just to move the story along to where we were talking, and that's when they're like, all of a sudden, all these monsters start showing up in the catacombs, and you're just like, every corner you turn with the camera, you're like, is there gonna be another one there? Is there gonna be another one there? And I think there's like four or five that like show up, and like the one that crushes poor Ivan's head, who was probably the only kind of sort of good guy in this movie, the big guy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So he seems like he's the most helpful and empathetic in some way, but he gets his head crushed by this weird Iron Maiden. It looks like an Iron Maiden torture device.
It was super rad.
Zombie head in it. Yeah, and the guy, poor guy, gets his head crushed, but not all the way. You get to feel his suffering for quite some time.
Yeah, this pressurized claw has collapsed around his helmet, so his helmet is attached to his skull from the inside now. And that's a problem, medically speaking.
As a doctor, I can confirm this.
Yeah, yeah. Right before this, our fellows, they find a guy. Some animals, actually. There's some bunnies in a cage, and a wolf in a cage that bothered my dogs a lot. And they encounter a fella, and they grab him, the caretaker of all these animals, and they're pretty mean to him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, typical Russian fashion. They torture him for questions.
Yeah. So you know, they cut his finger off, which is, you know, poor play. And he agrees to lead them
I think George Bush would have approved.
No, you have to, you know, just feel like your throat is totally saturated with water. You're just breathing it right in.
Right.
Anyway, they torture him. He agrees to lead them to what they're looking for. What is it? The Tiger Bear?
Yeah, Tiger Bear 303.
Tiger Bear 303 team that gave them the signal that they needed help. So he leads them down a catacomb in which all of those monsters come out. Ivan gets his head crushed. They find themselves to an encampment within these catacombs where there's some Yermans, and that's you know, that's a problem. These types, they are not allies at the time. I thought this scene actually was rough, but it had some really great elements to it.
Well, yeah, the poor nurse, it looks like Vasily's just going to kill her right off the bat for being German, and, you know, very much kind of, again, it probably was a lot more accurate to World War II than most World War II movies are.
Yeah, I got the direct impression that he was going to sexually assault her and then kill her.
Yeah, exactly. And it seemed pretty... So, yeah, the guys you're following are not heroes at all.
They say that they want to kill the wounded German. The German responds with, that'd be all right. I'd prefer if a actual human killed me rather than whatever these things are.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would too, rather than getting a helmet crushed around my skull. I think I'd prefer a bullet to the head.
Yeah, the German nurse tries to curry favor with the Russians by saying that she can help their man Ivan that still has the helmet attached to his skull, So she tries, and ah, damn, the brain pan fell right out in the helmet.
It's almost like a joke with a punchline. It's like, I could help. And then she pulls this thing off, and the guy's head collapses, and his brain's in the helmet. She goes, I tried.
I mean, she did get it off. I don't know what else they want.
She got the helmet off, but yeah, it's really well done. It's horrifying to look at, and I'm still like kind of laughing. It's just the whole setup. It's like, you know, it's coming. It's just like, it's like a really, really old joke, and you know, it's coming, and it's still at the payoff is so good.
You know, so fortunately they don't have a lot of time to focus on this error, because at that moment the mosquito man that you mentioned descends from the rafters. drills into one of their comrades' heads.
Alexei. The sniper.
Unfortunate for him.
Yeah, the long-haired... he's inexplicably a cool-looking long-haired dude for some reason, but yeah, he gets it. He gets it right through the back of the skull with, again, a amazing-looking practical effect. It's really simply done, too. It's just like a sideways drill coming out, but it looks so good. It's like right out of his mouth, and the blood's pouring out, and you're like, well, that dude's done for.
They're able to escape, the surviving ones anyway, at which point our man Sergei finds in Dimitri's bag that the distress call that they had gone to investigate was actually just a jammer within his backpack, which, as you can imagine, might anger you a little bit.
Yeah, the whole crew gets mad at him, and I also, this is another part where I appreciate this maybe Dutch viewpoint from the director about World War II. They, of course, the anti-Semitism comes out at this point, because it's Dimitri here, and you know, he's portrayed as a, they show him at the beginning, and he's, you know, he was a cinematographer and decided to join the army, but they start calling him, you know, a Jew bastard and stuff, just, which I thought was, usually in World War II, it's like the Nazis are the only Jew haters. It's like, well, actually, pretty much the entire world turned a blind eye to the German crimes, because there was a lot of anti-Semitism back then, and on all sides of all the world powers. And, you know, like America was turning away Jewish refugee boats from Germany, like in a cruel and callous move that nobody likes to talk about.
Oh, yeah. We had Nazi rallies, you know, like in the middle of New York, Madison Square Garden shit.
Absolutely. And the Russians were, you know, Stalin was engaging in Jewish pogroms, and, you know, and Lenin, I think Lenin was, because there was the whole falling out between the Trotsky camp and the Stalin camp, and the Trotsky camp was basically, you know, they saw it as the Jewish camp. So yeah, there's a lot of horrible anti-Semitism on all sides. And again, they're just like, well, these guys, trust us, they're not the heroes. This is just, we're just going to show this fucked up war situation. So Vasily starts getting into the anti-Semitism, and I thought that was a nice, nice touch. That's such a horrible thing to say, but it just felt accurate to me.
A realistic touch.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Our man Dimitri, the director, is telling him, we're on a secret mission. I couldn't tell you. You have to do this, because I've got names and addresses of everyone in your family if you try to, you know, abandon this mission.
But let's be fair to Dimitri. Apparently, his family, I guess, I don't know if it came up in this scene or later, but his family is also on a death watch if he doesn't carry out the mission.
Yeah, overall, you know, they're under the gun here.
Everybody's under the gun. Yeah.
You know,
or the sickle, or the chainsaw, or whatever device Frankenstein is attached to a zombie soldier.
So they're pretty unhappy with their troop leader that is calling rank on this shit. So he admits them that their mission here is to capture or kill the Nazi scientist that has created these abominations that's just wiping out these fellers left and right. They don't really have a lot of recourse here other than being mad and calling him a Jew. They have to kind of go along with it for the moment. They find they're running through catacombs, just trying their best to escape these monsters, and they find themselves in a a factory floor that has a chute and a Nazi zombie robot loading various things down it. Looks like a like lot of gore.
An entire spirit store worth of severed limbs.
It's at this moment that they find, this is probably one of the, I don't know, one of the the least expected things for me in this movie, but also it stuck with me the most, is that there is a small Nazi child that is in the chute and yelling nine at the zombie that's loading things.
And he appeared, I think he was earlier in the movie when they found the nurse, correct?
I might have missed
that. They found the Nazi soldiers, because they were hiding. The Nazi soldier that said, "I'd rather die by you than the monsters." There was, they also had the child with them at that point, and then they get lost, and everybody, you know, the monsters come in, and it's. But I think it's supposed to be the same child.
Gotcha. So our commander is telling the fellows, "Well, we got to go down that chute that the monster is loading body parts down, because that's where the action's at." It's overall not a very convincing spiel to the team, so they decide to tie up the Nazi child and lower him down first.
It's brilliant. It's just so cruel.
And listener, well, I'll be goddamn, that Nazi child just gets chopped right the fuck up.
Who could have predicted?
Apparently, I didn't think they would do it.
Silly predicted.
They definitely did it.
Yeah, it's just bonkers. It's so outlandish and just so over the top. These Russians, I'm not going down there, and they just sacrifice the kid to see what happens.
That child gets chopped up. The Soviets are like, this sucks. What if we just throw the director down there and he can figure this shit out on his own?
Yeah, so that's where we lose. Dmitri goes down the chute with the camera. So we lose track of all the other soldiers for a short time, because of course there's going to be more badness to come.
Yeah, Dmitri's going around. He's looking at all the fucked up things.
Wait, did we see Propeller Head yet? Wasn't Propeller Head right before this?
Propeller Head was right before this. I believe that was what Dunn did in the Nazi Child.
Oh God, that Propeller Head is one of the most amazing, just bizarre costumes I've ever seen in my entire life. To describe it to people who are not watching and they're just listening, it's just a giant propeller in where a face should be on this hulking being. And I remembered seeing it, and I watched it again yesterday to freshen up, and that motherfucking propeller spins fast. And that is a practical effect. So there's a guy in there with, has to be a pretty sizable motor in front of his face, and it looks incredible. It's just an incredible effect. It's certainly the most over the top monster I think in the entire film.
Yeah, it's great, especially because given what they do to the poor bastard that's behind that mask, one of the Soviets is able to disable it by cutting a fuel line that's running through the costume.
Right.
And in the process, he goes up in fucking flames as a real effect.
Right. Yeah, it's absolutely real. I mean, you know when there's, and there is apparently CGI in this movie, like some lens flare here, a little light there, maybe a little extra blood splatter. But this dude is on fire with a motor in front of his face.
I hope he got time and a half that day.
Yeah, he was probably getting, paid in Czech kroners, like not very much.
But it's just one of the just incredibly great, practical effects put out throughout this movie. Like definitely in the top three for me, I would say.
And yeah, I think absolutely. It's a credit to how good the movie is, because if you're just hearing us talk about it, there's a guy with a propeller for a head. It kind of sounds silly, but within the context of the movie and how it looks, it's perfect.
Well, and my friend Ryan from Engorged, I don't know if you remember the band Engorged, but he always says he has an Oscar rating system that he uses for movies, and Firewalk, like a guy catching fire, is worth one Oscar. So that movie already, as many other Oscars as probably is in this one, that is an additional Oscar to set a dude actually on fire.
Yeah. Major props to whoever was wearing that ridiculous costume.
Major props. The character, and apparently the director gave every monster a backstory. That guy was a Nazi who wanted to join the Luftwaffe but had bad eyesight. And so he got turned into a propeller head.
There really is like a Cenobite system within this movie then.
Yeah, I believe they don't get into it, but that was if I read some interviews with the director, and he talked a little bit about it, but he didn't get into, that was the one that stuck out to me, that were just like, that is just the dumbest, that is like something that, like, we would come up with for shit in our bands. It's so stupid. I love it.
Later on in the movie, we'll get to the CD launching Cenobite.
Oh god, no. Flashbacks. I hate that movie. Oh god. Anyways, yeah, we can get into another time about how much I hate the Hellraiser series.
Our man Dimitri's throwing down the chute. He's exploring all the things. He's seeing lots of monsters. They're chasing him. He finds a monster version of Dimitri who knocks him out, and he wakes up.
No, the monster version of it was Ivan.
Ivan, sorry.
Who's had he's got one sickle hand. The guy who had his brain pulled out, moments before. Apparently, Frankenstein has already gotten to him, and he's got a sickle hand. And I don't remember if he's holding a hammer or if he has a hammer.
He has a hammer hand as well.
Okay, yeah. So he tries to reason with his buddy, but there's no reasoning with a Nazi zombot.
Yeah. So a man gets knocked out, but he wakes up. And he finds that he's in the care of the caretaker, who would be one Dr. Victor Frankenstein.
Wait, did we pass the scene where he's in the giant slaughterhouse room, or is that later?
Oh, fuck. No, that's happened right before it. Please describe this.
It's, imagine what every metal band wished their video could look like. Instead of just a dingy old warehouse like that they rented, this is the best set I've ever seen. It's a huge room, probably like 3,000 square feet, maybe more, maybe like 5,000 square feet. And then there's like bodies, so many bodies hanging from the ceiling on chains, and mine carts filled with more bodies. I don't know how much silicone and latex must have gone into making this movie, but it's just, it's phenomenal looking. It's so gnarly, and there's, you know, blood, and I'm sure the dirt was already in the room because of the way they described making this movie. But yeah, there must have been like I want to say at least like 70 to 100 like hanging body props hanging from the ceiling, and it just looks crazy. I wish I could have filmed a video there.
Yeah, is it just an insanely grisly effect, like as you see the sheer scale of bodies hanging?
Yeah, and you realize it becomes like, you know, it started with this catacombs, and every monster has been really super interesting, and then you're realizing that the scale of this Frankenstein's work and how bonkers it is, and just like how much is like, you know, he's been hard at work, and you still don't think you've met Frankenstein. So moving on.
we meet Frankenstein, who was the caretaker before that those Soviets had treated so poorly.
And I looked carefully. His finger is sewn back on.
Yes.
Sewn back on, so you know for sure it's the same guy.
Our man Frankenstein, wearing the most tasteful sweater vest, is treating Dimitri very well. He has him in his kitchen. One of his zombie Nazi robots helpfully brings in a big pot of stew.
Which you can only imagine what it's made of.
Yeah. He tries
to... And he said he's fed it to his other creations.
Yes. It's a big dark red pot of stuff. I Googled what the name of it was. It's traditional German stew with whatever you have on hand. You know, Dimitri is, you know, being a pretty shitty guest. He's very, very rude to his host. So he has a robot hold open his mouth so that he can force feed him this piping hot stew.
a monster wearing an apron, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a good, he's a polite monster.
So he gives Armando Mitri a tour of the factory, and you know, tells him how he created everything and his lineage going back in time to his grandfather creating such things.
He wanted his work saved for posterity, I believe.
Yes, he
explains, because of course it's a found footage movie. They have to explain why the camera's running.
Yeah, he's running the camera, forcing Dimitri to film so that he can describe his process. You know, how his father wasn't very supportive of him. I think my favorite part was describing like his grandfather had done similar experiments, saying that he needed thunderstorms to do it, but now we got generators, baby.
You know, I think we can go ahead and say, I'm going to go ahead and say this is a sequel to Young Frankenstein, because that, I mean, I think that Frankenstein, he was also very much against his father's work, or was it supposed to be his grandfather? I'm forgetting, but let's just go ahead and say that's the line. Like, you know, I could see that guy telling his son that this is all bad.
Well, I really appreciated the wrinkle that Frankenstein is describing, like he and his family, they were sent to the camps. Because again, it would be Frankenstein, and he was let out of the camps because he showed a knack for the kind of grotesque medical experimentation that was very much in vogue with the Nazis at the time. It's only natural that he would be, you know, combining parts and just seeing what happens.
Yeah, very very Buchenwald. I think it was the Beast of Buchenwald, and that's where they were doing some of the more grotesque experimentations at the concentration camp there, which I visited and was a very somber, depressing place. Go figure.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
You didn't take a smiling selfie for Instagram like some people
did? Oh, no. I visited that with a friend. We walked around silently, and an interesting thing about that place, like I said, Buchenwald, where the Beast of Buchenwald was coined, and that's where they were doing a lot of more of the experimentation and probably mass killing also. The Russians took it over. Here's a quick history lesson. The Russians liberated the camp, and the liberating Russians took all the villagers from the nearby town and made them help clean up and as penance and say, look what you did. You let this happen in your area. Then the SKB came in. Was it the SKB? Is that the Russian intelligence agency before the...
Is it NKVD?
KGB? What was it again?
NKVD?
Yeah, it was the NKVD came in and said, hey, this is a pretty good camp. We're going to go ahead and use this for our political business now while we occupy Germany. And so if you keep going further through the camp, in the forest, there's another memorial. It's just bare steel pipes, and there's just, it seems like, hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands, just all littered throughout the forest, and all they have is a number on them, and it's to represent every all the people buried in mass graves there left unnamed.
Yeah, welcome to the camp where everything bad happened.
Yeah, and so, you know, the Russians, they're just like, hey, this is a pretty good idea. So it kind of fits with the character of the Russian soldiers in here, who are also fucking ruthless.
Well, I think that really seamlessly leads to, you know, kind of the denouement here, where Frankenstein is trying to solve the problems that he feels are perpetuated by both the Nazis and Soviets, where he decides that he can fix this by simply grabbing half a brain from a Nazi and half a brain from a Soviet and splicing them together and seeing what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you really talk about a left and right political mind, you know.
It's a red-brown alliance, I believe. I hear those are bad.
I was just thinking it was a centrist on Twitter.
You know, we just gotta pull together now. We need a president who commits war crimes politely.
He's gotta change his tone. That's all I care about.
Yeah, you know, and as long as we need a woman in there, but a woman who drones with respect.
Oh, agreed, yeah. You know, it's, you're much more sensitive that way.
Exactly, yeah.
I enjoyed watching him fuck around with these brains, to be honest with you. I've been doing stuff with
the left and right brain put together, and he's looking at one side and he goes, oh, there's a little bit too much on that side, and just spoons a little bit out of the brain.
I've been working with brain stuff in anatomy lab recently. So, I mean, I don't want to spoil it for y'all, but that's, you know, not exactly how your brain works or how it feels or looks. But it was very enjoyable, regardless.
It did look like a very large brain, as I recall. I was like, I don't think brains are that big.
Very but large. For film, also, there's a big membrane that covers it, and inside it's a little bit more soupy. It's not as clay-like as they were fucking around with.
Yeah, they're pretty soft, as I from my understanding, and fall apart pretty easy. They're not easily manhandled from one skull to another.
Furthermore, there is a cortex in the center of your brain, which really is where it all kind of happens. All the shit on the sides, it's less necessary.
Right. Well, that's why you just spoon some out.
Yeah, so if you're cutting right down the middle, you're probably going to have a poor result in the end point. But, I mean, he's working. He's trying new things. It's scientific method.
You know, maybe Frankenstein was just working on an early cure for epilepsy, because I believe they've done that.
Really?
There's a weird condition epileptic condition, and they'll slice down, they'll separate the hemispheres. Obviously the whole brain stays inside, but they separate the membrane between the hemispheres, and they will help people with severe, I think it was epilepsy. But then they do weird things, like their left hand will be doing something that they don't even realize is happening. Like, it'll just be playing with something on the desk and they don't even know they're doing it, but it stops these like severe seizures. Because there's like it's something about like a storm between the hemispheres, and when they sever the membrane. So hey, there's actual science behind Frankenstein's army.
Anyway, we splice that brain together. We put him in the electric chair. We try turning him on, and unfortunately, it didn't really work. You know, you gotta try and try again. Really.
Well, it's half of Dimitri's brain, and isn't it half of the brain of whoever the Nazi commander was that was dealing with Frankenstein?
Yeah, and I think he does work in that he creates an enraged monster. I mean, they got that far.
Yeah, I don't think that was the solution to the war between the empires at the moment. But
no, he kind of like he made that red-brown alliance you were talking about that does just even worse.
But he tried, and we have to give him props for that.
Can we talk a little bit about I think it's already appeared here, the little bowl robot, like he looks like a kettle.
Yes.
With the lederhosen feet.
Yeah. With the little, it's like, I think that's supposed to be the kid.
That is the kid.
And he's just this, it just looks like a kettle running around with these tiny little kid feet. So I'm like, did they actually shove a kid into this fucking costume? And he's just bouncing around with this giant kettle on his body. It's the funniest. It's the cutest thing since Zabu Frif or whatever the fuck. Babu. What was the one from The Last Jedi everyone freaked out about?
Oh, Babu Frick or something.
Yeah, like Babu that. Frick. It's way cuter than that. I would totally like this little like kettle bowl fucking Zombot bouncing around my house.
I thought it looked kind of like a Mega Man robot.
yes, it did. It had that adorableness to it, even though it was probably a cold, calculated killer.
No, again, like some of the creations within his laboratory are delightful. Like the aforementioned Nazi child legs on the bowl, or our Zombot with an apron.
Yeah. Or the teddy bear with the woman head on.
Oh, that one was fucked up. I hated that.
that was one that was because the director said, he said, they're like, how did the location change the script? He goes, actually, we shot 110% of the script. And that is to say, on set, we kept adding things. And apparently that teddy bear lady was just one of the effects guys was like, we could do this. And he's like, go for it. And so they made the teddy bear lady head thing. That was weird.
Things happen.
The nurse, was that supposed? There's a nurse helping him, another Zombot.
Yeah, and she looked like the opera singer from The Fifth Element.
I thought she was a little bit like maybe a homage to Bride of Frankenstein, just a little bit.
That could have been it too. Yeah. This whole time, our cameraman has been trying to work a deal with Dr. Frankenstein. Like, join me. You'll get you'll get all these great benefits from the Soviet Union, and I mean, Frankenstein's a little non-committal on this whole thing. Eventually, he straps the director man down to a table. He's going to do some experimentation when, unfortunately, bombs start dropping.
I think he said he's going to, it's his most Hellraiser 3 moment where he's like, I'm going to put that fucking camera in your head.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Is a cameraman, right, in Hellraiser 3?
There is.
Yeah, time for your close-up. Oh, God, it's awful.
And I was really excited about that prospect, but unfortunately the running time was coming to a close, so we had to have some resolution there. Our man Frankenstein is gathering his notes, and he's like, you know, I'd love to stick around, but, well, I don't want to die. I think I'm going to escape this whole thing and just continue on doing my whole thing. He's telling the fellow, like, by the way, when I leave, like, these zombies, they respect only one man, that's me, and I don't know what they're going to do when I leave, so good luck with all of that shit. At which point we see somebody we haven't seen in a little while. That would be the young fella, Sasha, who just pops Frankenstein straight in the back of the skull. Dimitri is chastising him. He's like, you have no idea what you've done, as Sasha, you know, makes quick work cutting off his head with a hunting knife.
Cutting off Frankenstein's head.
Yes.
Yeah. And taking it with him.
Yep. Yes. Dimitri
responds with the goods.
Dimitri is telling him, like, hey, you got to let me go. I'll make, you know, it's very important that you get me off of this table. I will make sure that you get the Soviet Union's highest honor or whatever. He doesn't take that deal. He disappears, leaves him to the table. And, oh, we see another guy from the past. That would be Sergei coming to life and eating his face off. Which brings us to the final moment of the movie, which is just, I got such a hearty chuckle out of this. Would one of you care to describe it?
Okay, I'll go. It starts pulling back on Sasha, who's been kind of portrayed as the bumbling idiot of the squad.
The young kid.
Yeah, he's the young kid. Nobody likes him. They're always telling him to shut up and, you know, whatever. And it pulls back from a close-up on Sasha in a photo. And he is standing next to Stalin, being rewarded by, you know, the being somehow rewarded for his work in retrieving Frankenstein's brain. And it's just pulls back. You're like, ah, Sasha made it. And it's just he got the payoff that Dimitri was looking for. And he's a hero of the Russian army. And it's just a huge punchline to the entire movie.
Yeah, of all of the various backstabbing among this battalion, like, the guy, nobody saw it coming. Stalin himself.
Yeah, just a little, exactly. Yeah, Stalin just came up. Nobody expected him to be the big heavy, and then he just kept playing the game and surviving, and that's exactly what Sasha did.
I really enjoyed the slightly dubstep remix of the Soviet anthem that was playing in the background.
Oh, it's you know, it's close to, like, it's kind of like hiring Liebach for Iron Sky. It kind of had that vibe to me, where it's this militaristic, semi-industrial, like, feels old but, you know, has the modern horror twist, or, you know, the punch of, like, industrial music to it. I really like the theme a lot.
Same. Yeah. It's overall, like, I was blown away by this one.
I'm so pleased to have brought you something, to somebody, you know, to guys who have 365 day of horror in their handle, to have actually found something they didn't see and they loved it.
Yeah, it really paid off. You know, there's, like you said in the beginning, there's a lot of things working against it, so my hopes were very low, but really from, like, the first 5 or 10 minutes, I was paying attention more and more. It's not like I can kind of wander off and come back like some of those Asylum type ripoff movies do.
Oh yeah,
it has a lot going for it. It's well written. It's well acted. The horror is good. The gore is good. The monsters look good. It's as absurd and ridiculous as it is, if you're just, like, reading a synopsis, it all makes sense and it all works out well. Like, even having Frankenstein in your horror movie sounds kind of silly, but in this case, it works out really well.
Yeah, there was another, was it called Overlord? I can't remember the one that was more recent. The American, is it Overlord? That is a similar vibed movie, and I thought it was pretty good, but this just blows it away in terms of just, it was not afraid to go completely over the top and be ridiculous. It was not made for any audience in particular. It was, like, clearly one man's vision of just fucking insane shit going on all the time.
Yeah, I felt Overlord like wasn't enough of a horror movie as I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
It was kind of advertised like it was, but when I saw it, I'm like, well, yeah, there's some kind of monsters in it, but they're not really scary, and there's not a lot of scary things happening. It's kind of like a World War II movie with some horror elements in it, where this is a horror movie with some World War II elements in it.
Yeah, I feel like Overlord, it seems like it almost like after, you know, I saw that, I actually saw Overlord after Frankenstein's Army, and I was like, did some executive see Frankenstein's Army and was like, we can sell that to an American audience? Like, is that, was that the, you know, the pitch or something? Because he's like, well, this movie's too over the top, but I think if we put some American heroes in it, and like I said, it was an okay movie. I enjoyed it, but it was not this.
I know you work with Ghoul a lot. You're one of their assistants. When you see a movie like this with all sorts of creative monsters and kind of this out of left field kind of thinking, does that kind of inspire you more, like when working on one of their comic books, to kind of maybe up your game a little bit?
Absolutely. Kind of, I mean, in terms of like making, you know, making monsters and stuff like that, this is like this, some of the stuff they pulled off, and a band like Ghoul is not going to have the budget necessarily to pull a bunch of shit like this off live, but definitely makes you think more about what you can do with a man in a rubber suit for any kind of application, because the stuff they pulled off in this movie is fucking bonkers. And they just, it's so over the top, and, you know, and then obviously the stuntmen in those suits just are incredible and put up with a lot.
I know Ghoul has played Obscene Extreme Fest in the Czech Republic. It's possible you can hook up with some of these guys to make it happen.
That's true. I really think a giant flying propeller head is the one thing missing from a Ghoul show to really bring in the actual danger. I think Ghoul needs to set someone on fire now. That's the call. That's what we need to do.
Agreed. So, I've enjoyed every Ghoul show I've ever seen, but it's been missing a man on fire element.
I think so. I agree. And you know, hopefully working with them, it won't be me. but it probably would be, because, you know, I'm not a cannibal thrasher. I'm just some guy who helps out behind stage sometimes. It really is inspirational. Some of this what they were able to pull off, and, you know, it makes you think. It does make you think. And, you know, Guar does some incredible things with their stage show. It's just so over the. So if you're a fan of those bands and stuff like that, even if you like Lordy, who suck balls, you need to see this movie, because it's that come to life. And the only other movies I can think of that really kind of hit that mark are some of the, you know, the Japanese gore films, where they'll have, like, you know, Tetsuo Iron Man was the early one I saw as a kid that was a real inspiration, with all the shit and the transmutations going on in the characters in that one. And I think this is the first time I've really seen an English language movie hit that kind of mark with, like, monster creation since The Thing, really.
It's good as hell, folks. So I finished watching This Thing, and I did that thing that you have to do immediately after watching something you enjoy. As you go online and look at reviews so you can get mad. it doesn't have a great rating on Rotten Tomatoes because it's populated by Philistines. But you have like folks from the AV Club saying that Frankenstein's Army is a ludicrous World War II horror flick that's bogged down by its found footage gimmick, which compromises and contradicts so often that it becomes a distraction. Dumbass.
I will say there was like probably two times in the movie, because this is my least favorite thing about found footage movies, is they justify the camera being on. And anytime someone yells at the camera, why don't you turn that thing off? I can't. That shit bothers me. And there's probably only two times in this movie where they did that. That stuff does pull me out just a little bit. I hate it. It's just like, look, I accept that you have a camera running. Just stop commenting on it. And, like, I think it was like Cloverfield. It was just left and right. They kept yelling at him to have, like, why do you have that camera on? And it's just, shut up. We accept it as an audience. We're fine with it. You don't have to over-explain it. I thought Frankenstein's Army kept that to a minimum. It's pretty much explained at the beginning why he's filming. Frankenstein explains why he wants it filmed for, so fine, we'll just roll with it. But it really, I think it kind of helps with explain the frenetic action and, you know, and it does, it probably does cover up some of the effects, because there's a lot of practicalness in this. You know, something like Cloverfield, they could have shot a whole movie out of that because it's entirely CGI fucking bullshit garbage. And so they didn't need to do the found footage thing at all.
I tried watching Cloverfield. Number one, I felt motion sickness. Number two, I got bored, so I turned it off.
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend at the time threw up. We went to see it in the theater, and she had to leave and throw up. And I wanted to leave just to leave because I thought it was a shitty fucking movie. But yeah, otherwise that review I think is actually pretty accurate, except for that's all the stuff I like. Like, this is a outlandish movie. Yes. Like, this is just insane. Yes, exactly. That's what I want when I watch some fucked up horror movie like this. I want to see the craziness. Same reason that people have problems with Bride of Reanimator, I think, because at the end, there's all these monsters flying around, and it makes no sense. And I'm like, it doesn't have to. This is beautiful.
I think that's really it, though. If our words haven't convinced you, I don't know what will. I think you ought to watch this movie. I think you ought to check out number one, Exhumed, and number two, the Ghoul comic book. Number three, follow.
Plug, Ghoul Comic is available on my website, and along with posters and art I've made. A lot of it looks like I wish I could draw like the guy who did Frankenstein's Army, but I don't. I'm not as good. DrSewage.com. That's Doctor with a K.
And we will have these links below the media player for your easy perusal.
And when are we going to get some more Exhumed hot sauce?
Oh, God. That's you know, the hot sauce guy is out of Exhumed hot sauce. Because he actually had to escape the fires.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, he's fine. His house is fine. It came very, very close, but he's back, and he's got a new kitchen, and he should be cooking up more. I was actually working on a label with him for he's doing a hot sauce for another rapper. The Ghoul sauce that he makes is available on Ghoul's if you look up indiemerch.com, Ghoul hot sauce, Google that. It'll show up, and you can buy the very delicious Ghoul hot sauce. That should have a new label from me soon. We finally drew up a new label for it that's a little more reflective of the band. And the Exhumed hot sauce, hopefully we'll have more of that, because that shit is fire. It is really good stuff.
HellaHotHotSauce.com.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for the remembering what I could not.
And he also has Techno Destructo hot sauce, too.
The garlic death sauce. It is very good. Kyle Coulson of Hella Hot Hot Sauce is an amazing hot sauce creator. He's making waves in the hot sauce community, which is an actual thing where they actually drink hot sauce. The reviews are insane. Those people are crazy.
This sounds delicious. I want to try all of this shit.
Yes.
Jordan, what's next up for the Halloween Spooktacular?
So next week, making sure all things work out, we're going to have our old friend who's appeared twice on the podcast, so now it's his hat trick. We're going to have Trevor from The Black Dahlia Murder, and we are reviewing an Italian horror movie from the late 70s, early 80s.
I assume there's going to be some titties.
Oh, there's a lot of titties.
I'm going to say you guys are going to be missing out on some propeller heads, though.
I mean, you gotta weigh your horror options here. I like them both, but we have to keep it even as we continue this excellent month.
I think every movie could use a propeller head, but that's just me.
Well, number one, thank you so much, Dr. Ross Sewage, for joining us today, and number two, for telling us to watch this movie. I really had a great time watching it, and I had a great time talking with you today.
Well, hey, thanks a lot for having me, and keep up the good work getting people into some cool shit.
Everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.